Today is a celebration, my friend. Today is a celebration. It's not your birthday, but it's a big day. This guy right here, what?
It's a huge day.
It's a huge day, actually. This guy right here, for the past year, has denied sugar. He said no to sweets. So he went on like a year. She's like, what? What? Yeah, this guy said no to sweets. He's like, year fast, I'm just going to take a break. You said no to Dr. Pepper. He even said no to Sour Patch Kids. He said no, yeah. Good thing you ended it before, like, next Friday, man. That would have been a bummer. That would have been Halloween. So this guy said no to sweets, and today marks the day on the dot where it's over. Yep. Applause. But, dude, that applause isn't good enough, man. I got something better for you. Austin, Jesse, come here. We're going to make this man something special. Because what was the one thing, if we were talking the other day, what was the one thing that you're like, dude, I have to have this. I miss this.
Ice cream.
Ice cream. So I'm going to make this guy the most celebratory banana split he's ever seen. All right, we're going crazy. So this man, you've earned it, Michael, I must say. Do we have paper towels? Darn it. All right, I'm going to try not to make a mess. And I'm bringing out the big guns here. I'm bringing out the big guns. So let's start with the ice cream. Neapolitan. Usually banana split has Neapolitan in it, am I correct? Where's the strawberry? It must be in the middle. Okay, so I'm just gonna start scooping, man. I'm just gonna start scooping because you've earned this, bro. You've earned this. You just tell me when to stop. Man, you just tell me when to stop, all right? And I'll stop.
Just put the whole thing in.
Let's make room for that. That's a good idea. I don't know why I didn't think of that. That's like a half gallon. All right, that's fine. Dude, I'm giving you diabetes this morning. You okay with that?
Are
you okay? Okay. Okay, so, all right, what else we need on this Sunday? Come on. Banana, right? Yeah, we need the bananas. All right, so watch this. Fake out. Did I just blow your minds right now? How many of you do that at home? You are correct. Hold on, I'll give you a second chance to watch, okay? Hold on. Fake out. Apparently that's what the monkeys do.
Do you say that every time?
Yeah, I do that. That's what I say when I open it. Fake out, and whoever's watching. So we got your bananas. What else do we need? What else do we need on this banana split, huh?
Licorice.
Licorice is, yeah, can you just take care of the, yeah. Here. We need some red vines. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen a banana split with some red vines on it, but today we are.
It's been a year.
It's been a year, man. And so we need some trail mix. You know, some nuts, some M&Ms. We need like the chocolate. We need the caramel in there, man. I'm treating you well, my friend. I'm treating you well. Got the chocolate syrup. We got the whipped cream. And I don't know about you, but I put gummy bears in my ice cream because then they freeze. Am I right? Who else does that? Yeah. Okay. So, we're missing something. Here, just in case you want one. One spoon for every finger. There you go. We're missing something.
Cherry.
Bingo. Cherry on top. It's right in here, bro. Come here. It's right in here. Let's get this cherry. Holy crap. Shoot. Bro. They're going crazy. Oh my gosh. Hayden. Okay. All right, that's all you got left is a gummy bear.
Here, have a red vine.
And a red vine. You got the rest? This guy goes a year without sweets and he has a gummy bear. Hey, I hope you feel good. I hope you feel real good. I hope that ice cream expired yesterday. I'm sorry, bro. I'll get you some ice cream later.
Thank you.
What you just saw go down is about the exact thing that happened 3,000 years ago in Israel. I knew something was up. Man, the Israelites made this huge banana split, and then, no, I'm just kidding. But it's darn close. All right, I'll prove it to you. Go to the book of Judges. I'm going to prove something. Go to the book of Judges. We're about, that's like the very beginning of a crazy story. Book of Judges is where we're going to be today. We're going old school. We're going Old Testament. If you have no idea where the book of Judges is, that's understandable. All right? Not really sure how many times you've opened up for quiet time and gone straight there. It's not necessarily like a Pauline epistle or something like that, but it's still, there's ice cream everywhere. It's still a great book. So here, if you don't know where it is, go to page one, basically, of your Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, boom, Judges, right there, okay? So it's pretty far in the front of your Bible. Now, if you go to chapter 6, it's all going to tie together right now, I promise. Chapter 6, verse 1. This is what it says. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. The people of Israel were walking away from God at this point. They were doing their own thing. They weren't listening to God anymore. They were worshiping this pagan idol named Baal, B-A-A-L, Baal. They were just doing their own thing. And so God, for 7 straight years, has this terrible pattern that always happens. Every year, right at the last second, when these Israelites are almost done with their crops, they were just picking their corn, they were just plowing the fields, right when they were about to just reap their harvest, the Midianites from every single corner come in and steal everything. 135,000 enemies, neighborhood bullies, come in right at the last second and steal everything. And all they have left is a gummy bear. All they have left is barely enough to survive. They're in deep poverty. Every year this happens. And right about the 8th invasion in a row, right when this is about to go down, God calls a man by the name of Gideon to the scene. He calls a man by the name of Gideon. Now, maybe you've heard that name before. It might be one of those names where you're like, I've heard the name. I feel like he's probably got a cool story, but I don't really know. Perfect, because that's exactly why we're doing this new series. It's called Hello, My Name Is, and we're going to study the characters of the Bible who might have gotten lost in the crowd of Scripture. Okay, so this kind of paints a picture for you, man. There's this huge crowd, but then there's that one dude right there, that one tall guy, kind of looks like Ryan Gard, right there in the back, in this crowd. He's kind of getting lost in the crowd, but who knows? What if that guy has a crazy story? What if that guy has something we can learn? That's this man right here. That's Gideon. That's a couple other characters that we're going to learn in the future. All right, so let's get going on this Gideon guy. Pick it up in verse 11 of chapter 6. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah, that belonged to Joash the Abizrite, where his son Gideon, our man today, was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. So he's got something left that he does not want them to steal. He's like, this is all I have. So he's kind of doing his thing. He's a farmer. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Pardon me, my Lord, Gideon replied, but if the Lord is with us, then why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, the Lord brought us out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us, and he's given us into the hand of Midian. The Lord turned to him. He probably allows that question to just settle. He doesn't even answer the question. He says, go in the strength that you have, and you need to save Israel out of the Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? Pardon me, my Lord, Gideon says, but how can I save Gideon or Israel? My clan is the weakest, and I'm the least in my family. The Lord answers again. He's basically like, shut up. I am with you. And you will strike down all of the Midianites together. After this verse, we're going to stop. Gideon replied, if now I have found favor in your eyes, then give me a sign that's really you talking to me, that you are God. So basically what just happened, this angel comes to Gideon and he says, hey, mighty warrior. Gideon goes, wrong, I'm a farmer. I'm not a warrior, I'm a farmer. Do you understand that? And the angel says, listen, you've got a job, and you're going to go save Israel. You are going to save Israel. God is with you, Gideon. God is with you, Gideon. And Gideon goes, pause. Really? Is God with me? Do you see what I'm doing? That's all the wheat I've got left, man. Do you see how much struggle there is? Why, if God is with me, why do I struggle? If God is with me, why are we here? Why the situation? What? How familiar do those questions sound? And like I said, God doesn't even answer him. He says, go. And Gideon says, hold on. And God says, stop. You don't get it. I'm with you. I'm spoiler warning. You're going to win, Gideon. You're going to win. Just go. I promise. And like if Gideon didn't understand that message very clear, he says, okay, prove it. Prove that you're God. Prove that I'm going to win. So he says, oh my gosh. So I'll paraphrase the next couple of verses. Gideon throws a bunch of stuff on an idol. He makes on an altar. He makes an altar and he throws a bunch of stuff on it and he says, do something. Prove it. Do something. Fire's cool. Make fire happen. Hey, angel, make fire happen. So the angel's like, all right, cool. God? Okay. So he takes his staff and he touches the idol with all the stuff and fire, flames everywhere. Gideon's like, touche. All right, we're cool. You're God. I just want to check. You know, you could have been someone else. So Gideon, skeptical Gideon, he has his doubts. All right. Not off to the best start here. God still has a plan for him. Something incredible is about to happen. And God says essentially, okay, we'll play this game. You tested me. I'm going to test you now. Ooh. You test me, Gideon. I'm going to have some fun. So he says, your dad, he's got that ball, pagan idol thing. Yeah. Destroy it. What? Destroy it. See, this pagan idol that these people were worshiping was the god of fertility, lowercase g, god of fertility. And it was like this god that Israel worshipped because this god supposedly would give them prosperous crops and harvest and people so they could have this massive, big, healthy, prosperous nation. So they worshipped this thing. And God's like, yeah, you know, even though that's your dad's most prized possession, that's like his high school 3-8 state championship football trophy that he won't let you touch, even though that's his most prized thing. Take it out, man. Destroy that thing. So Gideon's like, whoa. My dad's a mean dude. You know that, right? Okay, I'll do it. And he takes 10 men at night so no one can see, and he destroys it. Let's stop for a second because there's a really, really powerful truth here. This isn't the main point. It's like a stepping stone on our journey here. This is a really powerful truth. God gave Gideon a very small task to do at home that would prove that he could do something crazy on the battlefield. So Gideon had to take the stand against his own village before he even had a chance to take the stand against a huge enemy. And here's my point. Sometimes, this is on the screen, sometimes God prepares us for great victories in life by giving us smaller ones first. Jesus echoes those words in Matthew 25, 21. He says, when we're faithful with a few things, God's going to trust us with greater things. All right? Before you can snowboard down that black diamond, you better make sure that you can handle the bunny hill. You tracking? So look out for opportunities. Look out for opportunities of the small victories in life, the small spiritual victories in life, the little ones that will just even boost your confidence and your joy and your assurance in God, the small victories, the ones where you have courage to stand up for Jesus in a conversation, the small victory where you kind of just, you deny a lie that the world says about appearance and self-image. You reject that idea, the small ones, because the small victories will lead to a bigger one, the one where your reputation's on the line all of a sudden. And these small victories in life that you've won, you've gone to battle with, and you've come out victorious, these small ones might lead to the one where your faith is going to be tested big time. God gave Gideon a small one because what's about to happen next is really big. Chapter 7. We skipped a little bit. Just go with me. Chapter 7, verse 1. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon's new cool nickname they gave him because he destroyed it, and all his men camped at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. And the Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into the hands, or Israel would boast against me. They would say, 'My own strength has saved me.' Now, what I need you to do is I need you to announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear can turn back and they can leave Mount Gilead." And so 22,000 men left. 22,000 of them. That's a great idea. Peace. Next time, Gideon. All right, next time. So 22,000 leave. 32,000, now down to 10,000. The Lord said, "There are still too many men. There's still too many. Take them down to the water." This is hilarious. "Take them down to the water. I will assist them for you there. If I say, 'This one shall go with you,' he shall go. But if I say, 'This one should not go with you,' then he shall not go." So Gideon took the men, this is verse 5, down to the water. The Lord said to him, "Separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink." This is super random. Don't look into this. There's no metaphor here. 300 of them lapped their hands to their mouths, and the rest got down on their knees to drink. So 300 of them drink like dogs, apparently. The Lord said to Gideon, "Those are your guys." What? What the heck? God says, "Gideon, that's an impressive army you got there, my friend. You're not going to need them all. 32,000? Yeah, that's a lot." So he says, first thing, whoever's about to crap themselves because they just realized they've done the math, and like 135,000 against 32,000, not the best of chances, not the best of odds, tell them they can go home if they want. So they leave. 22,000 of them are like, peace. 10,000, God's still like, too many. Watch how they drink water. They look like dogs. Gideon's like, what? Yeah, just trust me. Okay, so it's 300 men against 135,000, man. Why the heck would God do this? Why would God do this? Why would God be so random? Why would God be so crazy? Because Gideon and the soldiers, they needed their faith tested before they were step foot on that battlefield. God had to test their faith. Because he didn't want a thought to cross their mind after this victory that they're like, "Look at me." God's like, "If I do this, there's no way they take the credit." So God tests Gideon, he tests the soldier's faith, and he'll test our faith. Here's another stepping stone for you as well. If you have one of these, write some of these down. God tests our faith sometimes for two reasons. One, to reveal if it's genuine, and two, to strengthen our faith for tasks ahead. So put yourself in Gideon's shoes for a second. Like, God tested Gideon to see if you actually did trust him, and like, he tested these soldiers as well, and he if they actually believed in the promises the day before, God tested him. Just know that God is doing the same thing for us, okay? God is doing this exact same thing for us. When he tests our faith, he wants to make sure we're in this thing. He wants to make sure that we know what we signed up for. Because maybe there's something that lies ahead. Maybe there's some task, some spiritual battle that's about to happen at some point we don't know about. God first is going to make sure that faith is rock solid. And then he's going to strengthen us for when that happens. Let's keep going. Gideon is still afraid and skeptical, and I'll paraphrase the next 10 verses. You can read ahead too if you want. But God says, this guy needs some confidence boosting So Gideon, right now, you see that camp down the hill? Take a buddy, go down to the camp where the Midianites are sleeping. There are two guys that are awake, though, right now. Everyone else is sleeping, but there are two guys that are awake. And this one guy can't sleep because he just had a dream. He just had a dream, and he's telling his friend about it. You might want to listen. So Gideon and his friend go down, and they crouch, and they listen to this guy's dream. And I'm telling you, this story is a comedy and an action movie combo. And this is an awesome example of that, because these guys have a dream. And the guy says, bro, he's telling his friend, I had a nightmare, man. I need help. I need, my mommy's not here. I can't climb in bed with her. I need you, man. I had this nightmare, and I need you to interpret it. So, okay, what happened? I'll hear you out. So there's a loaf of bread. There's a giant loaf of honey whole wheat bread rolling down a hill. And the guy's probably like, the heck? Okay. There's a loaf of bread, man, rolling down this hill. And it hops our wall. And it's like, it's flipping, and it's coming right at me. And it hits my tent, and it squashes every one of our tents. So what's it mean, man? And surprisingly, the guy didn't go, dude, go back to bed. The guy actually was like, whoa! There's only one explanation for that, and that's Gideon, that army of 300 we've heard about. They're going to win. Yeah, that's going down. That's going down, man. Really? Yeah, the loaf of bread, that's what triggered it. That's obviously it. So far in the story, we have men drinking like dogs who are supposedly the best warriors in an army, and now a loaf of bread has been interpreted into this. I'm telling you, this is hilarious. So let's keep going. Let's actually start reading. In verse 16 of chapter 7, let's see what happens. Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. So these are their weapons. They're probably better off with a giant loaf of bread to just catapult. But they have trumpets. They're going to play a little tune, I guess. And verse 17, watch me, Gideon told him. Follow my lead. All right, so he's the leader. All of a sudden, he's confident. He's like, I'm the man now. Watch me. Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. And when I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon. And so Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they changed the guard, and they blew their trumpets, they broke their jars and were in their hands, and they grasped their torches in their left hands, and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow, they shouted that, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. Each man held his position around the camp, and watch this. All of the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled, and when the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. So, I don't know what depressing song they were playing with those trumpets, but it caused them to kill each other. They blow their trumpets, they smash their jars, they light the torches, they freak out and they start stabbing all of their friends. And whoever didn't get stabbed ran as far as they possibly could, 30 to 40 miles outside of the nation. Gideon is the man at this point. He is the man. Even though he practically didn't do anything, he said, follow my lead, play this little tune. And they did, and that's what happened. Gideon went from a farmer to doing the impossible. In one day. And a super quick Spark Notes version of chapter 8 starts with this quote. Let us be just as watchful after our victories as we were before our battles. We'll throw that on the screen. I'll say it again. Let us be just as watchful after our victories as we are before our battles. Because this is exactly the counsel that Gideon needed after he just did work on these people. He found two two guys that escaped. A lot of people ran away. He found them. He killed them. He kind of did it without God's help. He's just doing his own thing. And something changed, though, in Gideon. There was a switch that turned on that's never been turned on before. Gideon changed. He went from the servant to the celebrity all of a sudden. The people ask him, they're like, please, be our ruler. Rule this nation, please. We're begging of you. And Gideon says, no. Gideon says, that's not my job, that's God's job. That's a solid, good Christian answer. The problem is when your good Christian answers don't find themselves in your actions following that, that's where it gets tricky. And Gideon's actions next don't reflect a good heart. Because he says, well, but while I'm here, I mean, while we're here, give me some gold. Give me a, look at all those 135,000 Midianites lying on. They're loaded, man. Give me some of their jewelry. Give me some of their gold. Bring it here. They're like, okay, you're the man. So they do, and they bring him all this gold, and he does, again, this story's random. He creates a robe. He creates some robe, this robe that only a priest was supposed to wear, this idol, and he makes this thing, and they start worshiping it. They're like, oh, this robe. I don't know why. They worship this robe, and now all of a sudden, Gideon, man, blew it. Missed an opportunity. Because now these people are right back where they started. They were right back into idolatry. Opportunity missed. Because Gideon strayed away from God's will. Straight away from God's will. And what was the biggest factor in his spiritual decline? Pride. Pride. The very last verses of chapter 8. Take a peek. No sooner, this is chapter 8, verse 33. No sooner had Gideon died than the Israelites again prostituted themselves to the Baals, and they set up Baal Berith as their god and did not remember the Lord, their God, who had rescued them from the hands of all of their enemies on every side. And they also failed to show any loyalty to the family of Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, in spite of the good things that he had done for them. Let us be just as watchful after our victories as we are before our battles. And here's the main idea. It's taken me 29 minutes to get here. But here's the main idea. Gideon started doing his own thing. Despite God being faithful, man, God was so patient and faithful and just guiding him and helping Gideon out. Beside all of those things, Gideon let pride get the very best of him. And we cannot let the same thing happen to us. Let's focus in on this for just a second as we close here. God is faithful to us. He's so, so patient. He's willing, and yet a lot of the times we fill ourselves with pride and we're not faithful to him. We're not patient with him. We want him to work now. And when he doesn't, they're like, okay, fine, I'll do it myself. We fill ourselves with pride, and the focus all of a sudden becomes on us. Man, in this relationship, we cannot be the center of attention. Hebrews 12 says you got to fix your eyes on Jesus, not yourself. We cannot be, in this relationship, the center of attention. A victory. I thought of this a couple days ago. A victory could be more damaging to our lives than the actual battle. Because we forget where that victory came from. Maybe that trial brought some pain. Maybe that battle brought some heartache, brought some pain, maybe brought with it some baggage. But what if that victory brought with it a ton of pride? And that pride could cause far more pain in the future than that initial battle ever could. Because pride is pride doesn't really go away. God hates pride, man. He says in Proverbs 16, 5, pride I hate. And then he says, pride I hate. It will not go unpunished. It will not go unpunished. Now I could take a turn here. We could talk about how disgusting pride is to God. But this verse still kind of gets the point across. In James 4, 6, it says, God opposes the proud and he gives grace to the humble. So God says, get away to the pride. He says, I'm against that. I'm against that. That is not us. But to the humble, I've got grace. And I'll end with this. As we start to do this, the focus has to change from us. It has to go to Christ and it has to go to others. For the application of HSM, for everyone in this room, we have to be more interested in the other. We have to be interested in people. I'm telling my small group guys this. Be obviously interested in other people. To the point where you're asking them questions. You're trying to find out about them. Like, maybe that's a red flag of pride. How often am I focusing the conversation or the situation around me? And the opposite would be, how often am I asking just questions? And to the point, maybe I'm being annoying. They're like, okay, that's enough. Like, I want to find out about your life. What if we started doing these sorts of things? What if the culture started to change here? What if, what would happen? This is crazy. This is crazy. What if every single person in this seat tried to fight this battle against pride? What would this place look like? What would the first 15 minutes in the lounge of the service, in the halls, what would that look like? What would the first 2 minutes that you walk in here and you take a seat and there's five people around you, what would that look like? What would 60 minutes in a message and in a worship service where you're emptying yourself of pride and you're allowing God to just work, what would that do? I can't imagine what this ministry would be. It would be incredible. If every single one of us was like, you know what, I'm gonna fight this battle. There's many small victories here. I'm gonna fight this battle. What would that look like? Because God, He exalting the humble is everywhere in the Bible. I mean, if you could just ring this thing out, everything about our life that has to do with pride, God's like, he gives grace, more selfless. Let's all work on it. Let's do it. God, we need your help though. Because this kind of stuff doesn't go away. Pride, like, man, you don't have it. Like, this is why we got into this mess. The Garden of Eden, this is where it all started, pride. So you want it just as much out of our life as we should want it out of our life. And so, God, may we begin this process of ridding ourselves of pride for the benefit of not only just our relationship, but for the benefit of your church, and specifically this ministry. We love you so much. We're so thankful for this time. And we pray in your son's name, Jesus Christ. Amen.